Right now, the device you are using to listen to this is, well, it's hoarding enough dormant computational power to run a professional media studio.
Yeah, it really is.
But for the last, I don't know, 15 years, you've likely been conditioned to treat your laptop or your phone like a dumb terminal, right?
Yeah.
Like a piece of glass whose only real job is to rent that exact same computing power from some cloud server hundreds of miles away.
It is a completely inverted economic model when you step back and look at it. I mean, we all bought these incredibly capable, really expensive machines only to let the tech industry convince us to offload all the actual processing work to massive centralized corporate server farms.
Right. Today is Monday, July 13, 2026, and welcome to today's deep dive into the 2026 Guide to AI Media Tools and Format Standards. Our mission today is to unpack a quiet but absolute revolution.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, while you were busy uploading photos or putting together a slide deck or queuing up a game, the entire underlying plumbing of the internet was just completely swapped out overnight.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the defining story of 2026 is that the power dynamic finally flipped. Because of these incredible leaps in artificial intelligence and client-side processing, that massive computational power isn't locked behind an expensive cloud subscription anymore.
It's just right there.
Yeah, exactly. It has been handed directly back to you, sitting right there on your desk.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand this paradigm shift, we can't just start with the flashy AI right away, as fun as that is.
Right, right.
We have to look at the foundational architecture of the web and how we basically put the internet on a massive diet regarding image formats. For decades, everything was built on the back of legacy formats.
Primarily the JPEG.
Exactly, the JPEG.
Yeah.
But looking at our source data, a format called WebP has finally reached 97% browser support globally. Hmm. So it is officially the new web standard.
And, you know, it sounds like a mundane back-end update, right? But the implications for global bandwidth are staggering. When you swap from JPEG to WebP, you are fundamentally changing how the visual internet is delivered to your screen.
I mean, I'm looking at these WebP file sizes in the data, and I honestly don't get it. The data shows a typical 200 kilobyte JPEG shrinks down to somewhere between 130 and 150 kilobytes as a WebP.
Yep.
With absolutely zero perceptible loss in visual quality to the human eye. How exactly do we chop 25 to 35% of the actual data out of an image file without making it look like a pixelated mess?
Well, it comes down to a structural change in how the computer reads the image using something called predictive spatial coding.
Predictive spatial coding.
Yeah. So instead of doing what a JPEG does, which is saving the color and brightness data for every single pixel in a grid, WebP looks at a block of pixels and literally predicts what the adjacent pixels will look like.
Wait, just guesses.
Basically, yeah. It predicts based on the surrounding structure and color. It only bothers to save the mathematical difference between its prediction and the actual image.
Oh, wow.
So by storing algorithms instead of raw pixels, it slashes the file size while preserving the visual fidelity.
Okay, but wait, I have to push back on the adoption numbers here based on the 2026 Core Web Vitals data we have.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Because if WebP has 97% browser support and it uses this predictive coding to save all this space, why are 70% of web images still JPEGs? I mean, PNGs are sitting at 22.5%, and WebP is oddly lagging behind at just 19.1%.
Yeah, it's a huge gap.
It's like holding onto a gas-guzzling car just because you're familiar with the dashboard, right? Meanwhile, WebP is the electric vehicle everyone can legally drive but just hasn't switched to yet. If it's vastly superior, why the hesitation?
What you're seeing there is the immense inertia of legacy infrastructure. I mean, it isn't that developers don't want to use WebP. It's that content management systems, back-end server pipelines, and literally millions of older databases have hard-coded JPEG as the default logic for two decades.
Oh, so they have to physically rewrite the plumbing.
Right, and rewriting that architecture takes time. But the pressure to switch is becoming unavoidable now because of a metric called Largest Contentful Paint, or LCP.
Ah, that's the major Google Core Web Vitals metric.
Precisely. LCP measures the exact millisecond the largest visible element on your screen finishes rendering, which is usually, you know, a massive hero image at the top of a page.
Right, right.
When you implement WebP, your LCP improves by up to 30%, and Google uses Core Web Vitals to heavily dictate search rankings. So if your site loads 30% faster, you rank higher, and you capture more traffic.
And it directly impacts revenue, which is why you should care if you run any sort of online business.
Oh, absolutely.
The sources highlight a real-world e-commerce scenario that makes this super tangible. Imagine you run an online store with 800 product images. If you optimize those images through predictive spatial coding, dropping them from 400 kilobytes to 260 kilobytes each, your overall page load time just plummets.
It's a massive difference.
Yeah. And a recent Google study confirmed that dropping a mobile page's load time from 5 seconds down to 2 seconds increases conversion rates by an average of 27%.
Because every fraction of a second you shave off load time prevents a potential customer from losing patience and just abandoning their cart.
Yeah, nobody likes waiting for a page to load.
Exactly. It's not just a technical optimization. It's a direct financial lever.
Okay, so we figured out how to mathematically shrink static files. But here is the causal link that brings us to the next phase of the revolution.
Right.
Even if we shrink an image with WebP, trying to display thousands of them per second in a complex 3D gaming environment still creates a massive bottleneck for our hardware.
Oh, yeah. A huge one.
So the only way around that bottleneck isn't just making files smaller, but making the rendering process inherently smarter.
Exactly. Moving from how files are stored to how they are actively rendered brings us to AI upscaling. An early 2026 report from Newegg noted a massive shift in consumer behavior.
What did they find?
Well, AI upscaling has completely overthrown raw teraflops or base frame rates as the single most important factor when you are purchasing a new GPU.
Okay, so help me understand the architecture here. Because we used to talk purely about rasterization pipelines, right? Like the brute force method of a graphics card drawing every single polygon on screen.
Right, physically drawing it.
Now we are talking about AI-driven tensor pipelines. What exactly is a tensor core doing that changes the math so drastically?
Okay, so rendering a modern game natively at 4K resolution requires an agonizing amount of brute force calculation. What a tensor core does, and this is a specialized math unit built specifically for matrix multiplication, is it allows the graphics card to cheat in the best way possible.
The T-tel.
The GPU actually renders the game internally at a much lower resolution, say 1080p, which is incredibly fast and easy for it to do. Then the tensor cores run a neural network that analyzes that low resolution frame, compares it to its training data, and literally hallucinates or predicts the missing pixels.
Wow.
Yeah, it instantly reconstructs the image at 4K.
Just makes it up based on what should be there.
Exactly.
And there's a massive battle happening right now to control that hallucination technology. Right. You've got the big three chip makers fighting for dominance.
No, it's a total arms race.
Right. NVIDIA has DLSS4, which relies heavily on those physical tensor cores, but it creates strict vendor lock-in. Like you have to own an NVIDIA card.
Yeah.
Then you have AMD's FSR4, which pivoted to being fully machine learning based, but it's universally compatible across different hardware.
Yep, much more open.
And then Intel is pushing XSS2, which offers this cloud-based shader delivery that developers can easily plug into their games.
What's fascinating here is how this arms race fundamentally changes the value of hardware. Take a competitive shooter like Valorant.
Okay.
If you're running a mid-range RTX 5070 graphics card at 1440p resolution natively, you might get around 285 frames per second.
Which is pretty good.
It is. But if you turn on NVIDIA's DLSS quality mode, letting the AI reconstruct the image, you suddenly hit 380 frames per second. That is a 33% performance boost conjured entirely out of intelligent software prediction.
That is insane. But let me ask you this. Does NVIDIA's strategy of vendor lock-in with DLSS4 mean gamers are being forced into a walled garden just to get those frame rates? Or do universally compatible tools like AMD's FSR4 actually level the playing field for people holding on to older rigs?
It's sort of a dual reality. NVIDIA's walled garden absolutely guarantees a more seamless, high-tier visual quality because they have total vertical integration over the hardware and the neural network.
They control the whole pipeline.
Exactly. But AMD's FSR4 acts as an incredible equalizer. It means a user who can't afford a $700 hardware investment can still leverage advanced machine learning to keep their older GPU relevant. It is genuinely democratizing high-end performance.
And that exact same democratization is spilling over into creative editing, right? Specifically with a technique called inpainting.
Oh, inpainting is wild now.
Yeah, because removing an object from a photo, say, I don't know, a person walking through the background of your shot, that used to take an expert 15 to 30 minutes in Photoshop.
Minimum.
Right. You had to use the clone stamp, painstakingly sample adjacent colors, blend the edges by hand. Now the sources note that masked diffusion models have brought that manual process down to an average of 2.8 seconds.
The mechanism behind masked diffusion is so far beyond traditional clone stamping. When you mask out an object you want to remove, The AI doesn't just smudge the nearby pixels over the hole.
Like the old content-aware fill used to do.
Right, exactly. Instead, it structurally analyzes the entire image context. The angle of the lighting, the depth of field, the geometric lines of a building in the background.
Wow.
Drawing on millions of training images, it mathematically deduces what should exist behind the object and generates new pixels from scratch to fill the void.
So it builds the background from nothing.
From nothing, it flawlessly handles incredibly complex textures, like rippling water reflections or, you know, the exact weave of a patterned shirt.
It's unbelievable. But the truly incredible thing about mask diffusion and AI upscaling isn't just that they exist, it's where they are executing.
Yes, this is the big shift.
And this brings us to the real paradigm shift of 2026. Moving these powerful tools out of corporate cloud servers and directly into your local web browser through client-side processing.
This is where we see a profound intersection of privacy and speed. The architecture of the web has fundamentally matured to support this. We have a great case study in the sources with a platform called Tekken Game.
Oh, yeah.
They've built an entire suite of professional media tools that execute 100% on client-side processing. Zero server uploads, zero downloads.
I want to use an analogy to really hammer home why this matters. Because sending your private photos to a cloud server just to compress them, it's like mailing your diary to a stranger just to have them put a smaller binder clip on it.
That is the perfect way to visualize it.
Right. Client-side processing means you keep the diary on your own desk. You get the binder clip, you put it on yourself.
Yeah.
You do the chopping on your own counter.
When you process locally, your browser directly leverages your device's own RAM and CPU to execute the task. The implications for intellectual property and security are massive.
Because nobody else sees it.
Exactly. Imagine a lawyer needing to compress gigabytes of confidential case documents, or a doctor converting IP-sensitive medical imaging.
They can't just upload that to some random website.
No. If they use a traditional cloud service, that data leaves their device. It travels across servers, and frequently those services have buried clauses in their terms of service, allowing them to scrape your uploads to train their own algorithms.
Which is a massive liability. But with client-side processing, the data never leaves the physical boundary of the device. There is zero risk of interception, data breaches, or your proprietary work being scraped.
Exactly. And beyond the security, there's the sheer velocity of the workflow. When you rely on a cloud server to compress a 5 megabyte image, the process takes roughly 10 to 15 seconds.
Uploading, waiting.
Right. You have to establish a connection, upload the file, wait in the server's processing queue, and then download the finished product. When you execute that exact same compression locally in the browser, it takes 2 to 3 seconds total.
And because you aren't utilizing a corporate server, the provider has no server maintenance costs to pass on to you, which means no daily caps, no file size limits, no aggressive watermarks, and no mandatory account registrations.
It's all free.
Yeah, it simply shifts the computational costs back to the hardware you already own.
It transforms an everyday web browser into a completely self-sufficient high-end workstation.
So we have the theory of client-side processing, but how does the actual execution hold up in 2026? Let's take the Tekken Game toolbox and compare it to the old guard we are all used to.
The contrast is stark. I mean, if you look at legacy competitors like TinyPNG, they enforce a hard ceiling on productivity. They restrict free users to just 20 images a day with a 5 megabyte limit and demand a $25 monthly subscription for heavy use.
And Remove.bg does something similar, right?
Yeah. Remove.bg will actually downgrade the resolution of your transparent images unless you pay a premium.
Right. And then you have these massive browser-based editors that try to be Photoshop clones. Using a massive browser-based Photoshop clone just to batch compress a few images is like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
It's way too clunky.
Tekken Game bypasses all of that overhead. Their image compressor instantly handles massive batches of WebP conversions. They built a watermark maker that gives professional photographers unlimited batch processing with single-degree precision.
So you can protect your intellectual property without compressing the master file. And they've integrated that masked diffusion architecture we discussed into a local AI object and text remover. They also offer a PDF to image tool that chews through unlimited pages without ever pinging an external server.
But the tool that really caught my eye is the audio converter. You can take a massive, uncompressed 500 megabyte WAV file, say a raw 2-hour podcast recording, and compress it down to a 50 megabyte MP3 at 192 kilobits per second.
Entirely locally.
Natively in the browser window. If you are a creator hosting your own media, Saving that much gigabyte bandwidth before you even upload to your host is a complete game changer.
They've also expanded into utility analytics for the gaming community. They introduce an AI scaling performance calculator, which pulls real benchmark data from PSSR, DLSS, and FSR.
So you can actually test it before you buy.
Right. Before you drop $700 on a new GPU, you can input your specs and see the exact mathematically predicted frame rate boosts for specific titles. They even built a gaming ping map that tests your real-time network packet routing to major servers for League of Legends or Counter-Strike 2.
It is a completely unified, ad-free suite that genuinely democratizes professional workflows. But, so what does this all mean?
Well, looking ahead.
Yeah, 2026 is the turning point where our local web browsers became the new mainframes. What is on the immediate horizon?
The underlying technology is only accelerating. We talked about WebP dominating image formats, but the immediate next frontier is AVIF.
AVIF, okay.
Yeah, AVIF utilizes an even more advanced video compression algorithm applied to still images, resulting in files that are 20 to 30% smaller than WebP.
Wait, if AVIF can chop another 30% off the file size, why aren't we universally adopting that right now instead of WebP?
It comes back to the computational bottleneck. The math required to compress an image that tightly is exceptionally heavy. Right now, a WebP takes about 1 to 2 seconds to encode. AVIF is currently taking 5 to 8 seconds to encode on standard hardware.
Oh, so it's just too slow for the average user right now.
Mainstream processors simply can't do it instantly yet. But as our local hardware acceleration catches up, AVIF will inevitably become the new baseline.
And the AI itself is getting vastly more complex. The sources indicate we are moving past just upscaling graphics or in-painting removed objects. We are looking at generative AI that can intelligently reconstruct minute details that the camera lens failed to capture in the first place.
Yeah, the generative stuff is wild.
AI that can endlessly extend the physical borders of a cropped photograph or execute complete artistic style transfers on massive video files in real time.
All of which demands an astronomical amount of processing power. And that is exactly why the entire software industry is aggressively pushing into WebAssembly, or WASM.
Now, the sources note that WebAssembly provides 5 to 10 times better performance for complex tasks compared to current browser standards. Why is it so much faster? What is the actual mechanism making that leap possible?
Currently, most interactive browser tools rely on JavaScript. When a browser reads JavaScript, it has to actively translate that human-readable code into machine language on the fly before it can execute the command.
Like needing an interpreter in the room.
Exactly. Huh. That translation step creates a massive speed limit. WebAssembly bypasses that entirely. It is a pre-compiled binary code.
So no translation needed?
None. When your browser receives WebAssembly, it executes the binary instructions directly at near-native speeds. That architectural shift is why we are looking at a near future where you can render and scrub through 4K video editing timelines directly in a Google Chrome or Firefox window without a single dropped frame.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. If WebAssembly makes our web browsers 10 times faster and capable of rendering 4K video locally, does traditional installable desktop software just go entirely extinct?
The boundary line between a standalone desktop application and a web browser is absolutely dissolving. We're rapidly moving toward a hybrid computing model.
Does that work?
The philosophy of this shift is that lightweight to moderate tasks, compression, in-painting, document management, will stay completely localized for absolute privacy and zero latency speed. But if you encounter a massively intensive computational job, like rendering a massive 3D architectural physics simulation, the browser will allow you to optionally tap into cloud processing.
Optionally being the key word.
The crucial distinction is that it becomes a choice, not a mandate. You are no longer forced to pay a gatekeeper just to access your own workflows.
So, just to recap the incredible journey we've been on today, we started by exploring how predictive spatial coding in the WebP format is saving the internet massive amounts of bandwidth and boosting e-commerce conversions.
Yep, huge shifts there.
We dove into the architecture of tensor cores and neural networks that allow our hardware to hallucinate extra frames and perfectly reconstruct missing pixels via masked diffusion. And we examined how client-side processing has turned our web browsers into lightning-fast, highly secure workstations, making professional-grade tools like the Ticking Game Suite completely free and unlimited on our own devices.
And this raises an important, final, provocative thought for you to consider as we look beyond 2026. If our local web browsers, supercharged by WebAssembly and client-side AI algorithms, are now capable of executing incredibly complex workflows entirely offline, Are we approaching the inevitable end of the cloud computing era?
That's a huge question.
Will the tech industry's massive multi-billion-dollar investments in remote centralized server farms soon be rendered functionally obsolete by the sheer dormant computational power sitting quietly right there on our own desks?
That is a fascinating architectural thought to leave you with. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems you use, keep learning about the technology beneath your fingertips, and hey, the next time you open a new tab, remember there's a massive computational powerhouse waiting right there in your browser. Go try testing its limits.